listening to this podcast, we know that you love dogs. Dogs enhance our lives in so many ways. For many people, though, dogs are a savior. Dogs really help people get through the day. And today I'm speaking with Ann Workman, who works with Guide Dogs for the Blind, and in particular, the Canine Community Programs. Ann, welcome. How'd you get involved in this sort of work?
Well, I started out in dog training as a hobby and volunteering at the local Humane Society. And this job kind of fell onto me. They were looking for somebody for this position, and my veterinarian recommended me. So I've been here almost 11 years.
Great. And what do you do here?
Well, I work in the breeding department and also in the dog placement program. So I do a lot of education of volunteers and dog adopters. I help make matches between people and dogs. For the breeding program, the dogs are cared for by volunteers in the Bay Area. And then dog placement for dogs that are released from our guide work program. Those dogs are adopted to qualified applicants, and I work with them and screening, educating them, and making matches. And another important part of the dog placement program is we work with other agencies or, other areas to help place dogs maybe in another career that if they didn't work out as a guide dog for a health or a temperament reason, they might have a talent that could be fostered in another career, such as search and rescue or hearing dogs or dogs for diabetics.
And all of which we will go into later on. But for openers, I grew up thinking that guide dogs were always German Shepherds. In fact, German Shepherds make good guide dogs, but that's not all, right?
Right. The primary breed that we use, the majority of our dogs are Labrador Retrievers. We do use some German Shepherds, some Golden Retrievers, a few of other breeds such as Standard Poodles, Smooth Coated Collies, and I think we have one Australian Shepherd working guide dog. But most of the dogs that we breed for our program and use are Labrador Retrievers.
Why is that?
Well, overall, they work out most successfully for our program, health and temperament. They're a very... What we look for as an ideal type of guide dog is a dog with low arousal, easy to manage, healthy, and Labradors seem to fit that bill.
Smart, easily trainable, or are all dogs smart and easily?
They're all smart and easily trainable, some in their own ways. Labradors are very adaptable and have great coping mechanisms, so they really do work out well for guide work.
So, and tell me about some of the other dogs. So Golden Retrievers a little bit less so. Why is that?
Well, Golden Retrievers have been successful as guide dogs. In fact, we also breed Labrador Retrievers to Golden Retrievers for a crossbreed. And German Shepherds also, we utilize a few of them too. They might have higher distractibility, higher arousal.
And that's true for Shepherds as well?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
Okay. What about Labradoodles? I know that... there are a number of people who are allergic, for instance, to dogs that shed, have high dander count.
Right, right. Well, we have utilized some standard poodles, and Labradoodles are a breed that's being, they're being utilized by some other guide dog schools. There's one in New York. The Guide Dog Foundation does some Labradoodle breeding, and we haven't explored yet that crossbreed. But you never know what could come down the road.
You have your paws full, as it were, right?
Yeah. We're so successful with our breeding colony as it is right now, but we're always open to exploring other breeds and breed combinations.
I would assume that there are not organizations like Guide Dogs for the Blind in every major city. I'm just fortunate enough to live in the same town as this particular Guide Dogs. How wide a range of geography do you serve?
We serve North America, so we have
kind of wide.
Yeah, we have clients from the United States and many from Canada. We're a member of the International Guide Dog Federation, which is a governing body internationally for guide dog schools, and they help set standards. We exchange ideas, exchange breeding stock with other guide dog schools worldwide. So there are other guide dog programs in the United States and around the world.
How many? I mean, tens, hundreds?
Probably 100.
100.
Yeah.
So really not that many.
Not as many as you might think there would be.
And are there enough dogs to meet the demand out there?
There are, and we're always trying to introduce the guide dog lifestyle to visually impaired people. There are a surprisingly small percentage of visually impaired people actually have guide dogs.
Why do you think that is?
It might be because it's a big commitment to take a guide dog partner on in your life. It's really a lifestyle. And some people might not be comfortable taking on that commitment. Some might be completely content and feel, you know, that they have safe travel, safe orientation and mobility, and they might not feel they need a guide dog.
What are the advantages?
Well, I think the most obvious one is the one that you and I can relate to.
And probably everyone listening right now.
Is the human-animal bond, that incredible, incredible partnership between a person and their guide dog. And our promotional material, our video that we use promotionally is called Soulmates, and that really sums it up. Also, guide dogs enhance mobility and travel safely, increase speed that a person can travel with. There's many, many advantages to having a guide dog for safe travel.
Breeding is just one function that happens here at Guide Dogs for the Blind, right?
Right.
Tell me about the whole operation.
Well, we're an operation that's really dependent on our volunteers, our staff, and they really are the people, the volunteers, and the staff are the people that really help create a guide dog. So from conception, the breeding program handles conception, breeding the dogs, producing enough dogs for our program. And once the pups that we produce are old enough, at 8 weeks, they go into volunteer puppy raising homes. And those are volunteers that take care of our dogs and make this probably about a 16-month commitment that's really intense. They're responsible for socializing the puppies, teaching them some basic obedience, really making them good canine citizens. So when they return for formal guide work training, when they're about a year and a half of age, they're ready. We have the best raw material ready to work with. And so the puppy raisers make that all happen. And then they...
And are those through the 4-H club?
Well, they can. Traditionally, and back when Guide Dogs first started, it was all through 4-H. Now you don't have to be a 4-H member. You can make it a 4-H project, but you can volunteer by joining a local puppy raising club. And raising a puppy, you don't have to be affiliated with 4-H.
So are the puppies raised all over North America, or are they pretty much local?
8 Western United States. So we have puppy raisers from Washington on down to Southern California, Arizona, Colorado.
And do people come here to pick up their puppies, or are they sent?
They might. If they live close enough, they can drive to campus, pick up their pup, or we have a puppy truck, which I'll point out to you on your way out, and that transports our puppies around the 8 Western United States for designated drop-offs. And then at that time, the puppy raisers might be turning in a young adult dog that they've raised for the program. So when the puppy truck goes out on a trip, it's delivering about 35, 8 to 10-week-old puppies, coming back with 15, 16 adult dogs ready for training.
So you have families that do this on an ongoing basis?
Some of them are serial puppy raisers, yes. They'll repeat, they'll raise, yeah, they'll continually raise, which is great.
And then they have to continually say goodbye.
Yep, they do.
And that must be very challenging for them.
I think it's a really... It's amazing to talk to puppy raisers because most of them have such an incredible attitude about it. They really know what they're doing this for and why they're raising the pup. So, yeah, just when the pup's great to live with and well housebroken and all that, they're returning it to our campus.
And then what happens?
They enter formal guide work training where they're assigned to our licensed instructors and other staff and volunteers who care for them while they're here for formal training in our kennels. We also have a campus up in Boring, Oregon. So they'd return either to San Rafael or Boring for formal guide work training. That typically takes a minimum of about 5 months before they're class ready and are paired up with their visually impaired partner.
And then when a visually impaired person chooses to sign up for your program in order to get a guide dog, what happens there? I would assume they have to come here and be trained.
Right. They go through an application process, and they're well screened, and we have representatives throughout the country that would do in-home interviews. They have to have proven orientation and mobility skills. And we make sure that it's going to be a good working relationship between that person and a future guide dog. And then they would, in most cases, come to either campus to receive their dog and the training. And that could be anywhere from 1 week to 28 days, depending if they're a new guide dog user or not.
And what happens over that period of time?
Well, they come and they reside in our dormitory.
Oh. Hi. The most welcome interruption.
Yeah.
Go on.
They come and they reside in one of our, in our dormitories, and they live here. And a lot of people call it boot camp, but they're really indoctrinated in guide work training. They actually are matched with a dog that's ready to go to class. And then the trainer, the licensed instructor, really transfers the training from them to the guide dog user. And so
you're in effect training both. You have
right.
to be training the dog and the person.
It's, it's a lot of, it's both dog and people training. So our licensed instructors and the staff that do the training are really skilled in both dog training and people training.
Does it ever happen that a bond doesn't take place between a dog and a person who've been assigned to one another?
It can. I think it's possible. It's probably less frequent, but it's possible. Sometimes if a match isn't right, they might replace the dog with another dog in class. Yeah, that occasionally happens.
Not too frequently, I wouldn't imagine.
No, not usually, no.
We are in a play yard right now,
right?
Which is to say what? Individuals can
Well,
come.
It's like doggy recess around here. We have staff members that are bringing their dogs in for a break. And also our training staff uses this yard for off-leash obedience work, training. We have an agility course here. So they do a lot of work with the dogs on different apparatus. You can see there's some climbing stations, tunnels. So it's just a dog activity play yard here.
And we thought this would be a perfect place to record. Why be in a blank, silent studio when you could get the sounds of
all the
guide
atmosphere.
Dogs for the blind? And maybe we'll walk through the little puppy area later.
Oh,
are we allowed
to
do that?
I'll show you the puppies that are being socialized. They're between 6 and 8 weeks old, and we have volunteers there that are working with them.
Now there's a job. Puppy cuddler? You could actually be a puppy.
We have puppy cuddlers. These are puppy socializers. It's a very coveted position.
I bet.
So we have volunteers that come in 6 mornings a week and work with socializing the pups.
What a job.
Yeah.
So at the end of that 28 days, you actually have a graduation that's open to the public, right?
Right. Every 5 weeks, we have a graduation Saturday. They're on or a graduation ceremony. They're on Saturdays. They start at 1:30 p.m. They last about an hour and a half, and they are open to the public. And
it's very touching, isn't it?
It's really touching. And I've worked here for many years, and I still cry at a graduation ceremony. It's really...
What happens?
Well, what happens is the dog is presented to their partner by the dog's puppy raiser. So when puppy raisers can, they attend graduation to meet their dog's new partner, and then they go through a formal ceremony where they present the dog to the blind person. And it's very touching. They both get an opportunity to speak about their experiences. And it's fun, too. Some people will write poems, sing songs. Some people can't talk. They're so choked up. You can imagine.
And do they stay in touch with the dog over the years?
Many do. Yes, many do.
And that's not discouraged?
No, not at all.
I'm, you know, being a lucky person who lives in this area, I know many people who are, and I won't say the owners of, but I guess the custodians of, breeders or studs. Can you tell me about that?
Well, the breeding program, we have close to 200 dogs that we've selected from our own training program. And these are dogs that exemplify both health and temperament-wise what we want in a guide dog. And so those dogs are placed with volunteers that live in the Bay Area that house, care for the dog in their home, and then they bring them back and forth to our campus for breeding purposes or if they're a female when they come in season, if it's a stud dog when he's called in for a mating. And then the females also whelp their litters here and raise their pups till they're 6 weeks old.
And then eventually when their breeding cycle is finished, the people become owners of the dogs?
They adopt them, right, once the dog's retired from the breeding program. So, yes, in this area, you'll see a lot of breeding stock dogs with their custodians.
It's a wonderful deal. If you're going on vacation, you can drop the dog off here.
As part of the privilege and part part of the win-win situation, they do receive on-campus benefits here. So the dogs are actually required to come here for their veterinary care, and then they board here when they're needed for breeding purposes, and also if the family's on vacation.
And they're wonderful dogs.
They
pretty
are.
Much uniformly.
Yeah, overall. I mean, you can, every dog has their own distinct personality, temperament, energy level, and all that. But we definitely do have a type, you know, and that's the product of a selective breeding program.
Tell me about the dogs that don't make the grade in terms of the program, that for whatever reason the staff here determines that they're not going to cut it as a
right.
guide dog.
A dog could be released from our program anywhere in its life cycle for either a health or behavior reason. And some of those dogs will go on to be adopted by their puppy raisers, or they might be selected for another program. Watch the cords. We have a canine buddy program where we place highly manageable dogs with families with blind children that are too young to yet apply for a guide dog, but they learn about our dogs, about caring for a dog, the human-animal bond. So those are canine buddies that some of our dogs will go on and have a career with them. They might be placed with another agency, such as Dogs for Diabetics, the San Francisco Hearing Dog Program. That's a part of the San Francisco SPCA. Some of our dogs have gone to the National Search Dog Foundation, local police departments, sheriff's departments, as a narcotics or a cadaver detection dog.
So they could just have a different skill or talent that's not...
That might not. That might be contrary to guide work, but could be developed and successful in another line of work. So that's been a really successful program, having our dogs go... We call it our community placement program, where they go to other working careers. Or we also look to, you know, adopt out dogs to maybe a family with a disabled family member, that the dog could really be beneficial to that person as a pet companion. So, yeah, it's exciting to be able to see a dog that might not work out for this line of work, but go on to significantly enhance somebody else's life in another way.
It's wonderful. Tell me about the funding model. You mentioned volunteers in practically every other sense, and I know they
really,
make this organization run.
They are so important. They really are, you know, the heart of this agency. We are completely funded by private donations, and so a person that receives a working guide dog receives it at no charge. They come to our campus and stay here at no cost, and they receive the dog at no charge. So our funding is all through private donations and bequests.
And if people want more information, we can direct them to the website.
To our website, which is www.guidedogs.com. Or we have a toll-free number, which is 800-295-4050.
Ian, is there anything in particular that you could really use from the public? Obviously, donations are always welcome, but...
Financial support is important, and also we have over 600 on-campus volunteers between our two campuses. We're always looking for people that are interested in volunteering on campus or doing other volunteering off campus, such as puppy raising, breeding stock custodians. There are other ways you can help by we have people that get do speakers to different agencies around the United States about guide dogs. So there's a lot of different ways people can help.
And I'm sure the website will direct them to the appropriate
right.
person.
Right. We have an extensive website that also talks about ways you can help volunteering and all
right.
of our dog and people programs.
So I know that the puppy cuddler position is coveted, you mentioned earlier, but, you know, because I've done this interview with you and put
do you
this
think
word
he, I can
on, you
pull
think
some
I might
string?
Be
no way.
jump a little bit higher up on the list?
We'd have to go through all those people over there.
She's Ann Workman
force.
From Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael, California. I'm Joanne Green for Good Dog.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.